A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 446. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Noggin the Nog. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we are back with small films, the wonders of small films and their production of Noggin the Nog, that ran for a total of 27 episodes of 10 minutes each. 21 of those are in black and white, and then 6 in colour. Originally ran on the BBC from 1959 to 1965, and then returned with those 6 colour episodes in 1982. And we have a stop-motion animated fantasy tale of the men and women of the North and their adventures with a number of fantasy creatures and strange contraptions, Brian.
Yes, indeed. And these are the drawn or painted backdrop and cut out paper figures that are used for stop motion. So it's the 2D version. So we begin with the tale of Noggin traveling north to win the hand of his queen, Nuka of the Nukes. And the second saga has Noggin encountering this friendly ice dragon called Grolliff. And it's worth noting that dragons also feature in Ivor the Engine and in Clangers. So in small films, dragons seem to show up quite a bit.
It's perhaps not a surprise that the current shop for buying small films products is called the Dragons Friendly Society.
Very nice.
After that, we have a series about Noggin and the Flying Machine, one of Olaf the Lofty's strange inventions. We have the Omrods. We have the Fire Cake, which introduces a new technology to the world of Noggin the Nog, one that Noggin is not terribly keen about, Brian.
Yes, and that may be one of the points where we sort of get into some allegory and, you know, the ideas of more powerful weapons and once the technology for something exists, how you should manage that.
Interesting stuff, I guess. That must have been quite prevalent in the late 1950s or the 1960s when they got to that one.
Yeah.
Concerns about that must have been on their minds, at least.
You would think so, for sure.
And of course, they're going to return in the 1980s with more sagas, or rather with a remake of the Ice Dragon story with the wonderful Grolliff again, but this time in colour, and a new story called Noggin and the Pie, which is another wrinkle on the villainy of Noggin's wicked uncle.
Yes. And the first time we have young Knut, Noggin's son, taking center stage in much of the story. So that was interesting too.
Now, when there are spin-offs for the shows that we cover on British Invaders, we like to try and touch on those as well, don't we, Brian?
Absolutely. And in this case, Oliver Postgate and Peter Furman published 8 books of stories on Noggin the Nog, which were written by Postgate and illustrated by Furman. So they had something of the feel of the television shows, but in still frame and without the audio, you know, in book form.
And some new characters and creatures for them to encounter in the stories, published by Kay and Webb in a series that was described as a starting to read series between 1965 and 1973. The 5th book in that 8-book series is particularly notable to us. This is a book from 1967 called Noggin and the Moon Mouse. And if you have listened to our episodes about Clangers, you will know that the Moon Mouse was the inspiration for what would later become the wonderful 3D animated creatures, the Clangers.
Yeah, interesting connection there for sure.
And you'll find those 8 storybooks on the DVDs that we've been talking about. These are the stories that have been set to Vernon Elliott's music and narrated by Oliver Postgate Skate. I think last time I said 2005, I think it's actually 2004 that they did those narrations and put the music on these stories.
Yes, and those give you that sort of point in, somewhere in between the books and the television version where you have that audio being added to it.
Now, after those initial 8 storybooks, they then published 12 hardback stories between 1968 and 1975. And these are the books that are still available to buy in a nice slipcase edition from Small Films for £60, which you can get from the Dragons Friendly Society shop. We'll put that link on the various socials when this episode comes out, so you can go and have a look.
Yes, and I think some of the earlier ones are floating around in used copies that are not too expensive.
Nice. Now, last time we were talking about a show that got a musical theatre adaptation, and perhaps not surprisingly, Noggin the Nog also featured on the stage. 1971, the Birmingham Repertory Theatre adapted Noggin the Nog into the Noggin Christmas Show with a script by Oliver Postgate and by Peter Furman, who also designed the sets, and some original songs written by Norman Dannett. Interesting to know yet another sort of musical version of a show that we've been covering, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And that show was actually revived in 2012, but this time with puppets. And that was at the New Diorama Theatre in London.
Interesting.
And Noggin the Nog was also featured on a special issue stamp from the Royal Mail in 1994. As part of a series covering children's TV programs.
And I shouldn't say this, Brian, but I feel another list coming on of TV shows that we've covered that have featured on Royal Mail stamps. I know some of the Small Films ones have, and obviously Doctor Who has, but I'd be interested to see which other ones have from our notes.
Are we going to get you into stamp collecting now?
Tracking down the stamps of the shows we've covered.
That could be quite the project.
I don't know if there were any toys based on the series. I would imagine there were, but the only ones I can find now are the licensed miniature figures of Noggin the Nog, which you can buy from the Little Soldier Company. These are the sort of raw base metal figures which you then paint yourself, and then you use them in a board game. And I'm not a gamer, Brian, but there is a game called The Tales of the Northlands from Amusement Games, which apparently features Noggin the Nog and these little metal figures that you can buy and paint. I don't know much more about it than that. If anybody is a board gamer and is familiar with either the company or the game, do let us know about it.
That's wonderful. That sounds great.
So that's all the good stuff, the spin-offs. We're going to talk briefly about some less good stuff, some elements of Noggin the Nog that have not aged well, which I suppose we would expect in a way for a show that's over 60 years old.
Yeah, and we really do need to talk about it for something like this.
Yeah. So last time we mentioned this silent film from 1922, the inverted commas documentary film, The Nuke of the North, and it was a particularly culturally significant film which had an influence on both Peter Furman and Oliver Postgate. I presume The Nuke of the North was well known in North America as well, Brian, because over here it was a huge cultural thing for quite a while.
Yes, I believe it was. It was directed by Robert Flaherty in 1922, and it was criticized for constructing reality, for doing things like changing the name of the main character, the main person, and encouraging him not to use technology that he was familiar with. He had to not use his gun hunting and had to pretend to have not seen a gramophone before. So it was an example of documentarians exaggerating the quote-unquote primitive nature of people from other countries, other cultures, for dramatic effect. And it's an early example of that, but that unfortunately is a significant phenomenon.
And it must be a very early sort of film example of that. It is something, particularly for a film that has as much cultural impact as The Nuke of the North, and it is something that, you know, we now look at rather askance. But actually, it still happens, as we know, Brian. I mean, in the last 10 years or so, I know the BBC has got into some controversy about filming people in various parts of the world and the filmmakers encouraging them to perhaps return to a slightly more, I don't know, what's the word, visual friendly or primitive way of life. So they getting people to take off their Western clothes, move out of their houses and back into more primitive dwellings just for the films. And, you know, there's been examples of that fairly recently, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's very strange, but unfortunately something that has been done, you know, in order to, you know, sell films as entertainment quite a bit.
And we know that, you know, this was Nanook of the North had a big impact, particularly on Peter Fermin and his family. So it's perhaps no surprise that it led to some of the problems with Nog in the Nog.
Yeah, in Nog in the Nog, we have the Nooks, who appear to be Inuit or quite similar to Inuit, and, you know, stereotypical depictions there. We also have the little people from the Hot Water Valley and the Nogs themselves, who are presumably meant to be Scandinavian, but they're, yeah, some sort of strange depictions that come up there.
And there's some other sort of racial stereotypes that they're going to encounter, we're going to discuss in a moment. I was slightly bothered by Nogbad the Bad. We think from discussing off air that he's probably just more pantomime villain rather than racial stereotype. But it does seem slightly uncomfortable at times. He is so deliberately portrayed as evil and wicked in such a strange way.
Yeah, and he very much fits into the style of villains in cartoons that you had in the late 1950s. We also have Middle Eastern people, or people similar to that, who are showed in a very stereotypical way that's quite uncomfortable, with them being portrayed as nervous or cowardly, and, you know, stereotypical types of things they show them with, you know, their flying carpets and a variety of things. It's, like I say, rather uncomfortable depiction there.
Yes, that's the flying machine story, and Oliver Postgate doing the voices that perhaps now, again, as I say, makes us wince slightly with this depiction of people from the Middle East, and particularly, as you say, Brian, their depiction as being sort of deceiving, money-grabbing, cowardly. It does feel a little bit weird looking at it 60 years later.
Yes.
And of course, later on in the colour episodes, you know, it persists into the 80s. We get a very stereotypical Italian chef. And if you look at the storybook reading of Noggin and the Elephant, you'll see a trope that we encountered in Ivor the Engine, with the rather sort of Indian elephant keeper character being played rather sort of stereotypically and for laughs, which again is slightly uncomfortable with our modern eyes.
Yes, indeed. So I think it's time that we talk about some of our own thoughts and opinions about this. So, Eamon, what did you like about Nog in the Nog?
So, as you know, Brian, and regular listeners will know, I'm very happy to be back in the wonderful world of small films and to talk about some of the good stuff, having, you know, just been briefly talking about some of the things that bothered us now. Let me say that the animation style, I think when the BBC picks them up after their first six episodes and presumably gives them slightly more than £100 an episode, everything slightly, you know, improves. The animation style improves. There's more voices. There's more. The music is noticeably richer and more variety. So I think once it gets going, it starts to look and sound just fantastic in a way, Brian.
Yes, it has. I think especially in black and white, it has a very nice look to it. And yeah, it has a nice look and sound to it. I will also note that the character of Noggin himself, some of the other characters, but Noggin especially, is quite charming. And that's sort of nice to see in a children's show like this.
Yeah, Noggin's wonderful. He's the likable one. He's kindly. He is sort of trying to do the right thing all the time. And he's sort of like noticeably anti-violent as well. He looks for peaceful solutions to problems. Some of the other characters have more problems with them, but Noggin is very charming and lovely at the center of this show.
Yeah, Noggin and Graculus are the characters that stand out. I did quite enjoy Graculus in this.
Graculus is great. I love the voice of Grolliff, the Ice Dragon, when Oliver Postgate does him. Another one of Oliver Postgate's characters that always seems slightly grumpy and out of sorts, but are trying to do the right thing. A bit like Bagpuss later on. So that's great stuff. So, we should say that the voicing by Oliver Postgate, apart from some slightly dodgy accents, but the narration by Oliver Postgate and then later on getting voices by Ronnie Stevens and Sandra Kerr is great stuff.
Yeah, it is. And I also liked when they did things that were a little bit fantastical in this. They always do things with dragons that are a little bit less obvious. And I like the ice dragon, how the ice dragon was used. I like some of the things they did with the boats and the flying machine. They get into things with genies later on. Some of those sort of more fantastical and out there kinds of things were really quite fun in this.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we want, really, isn't it? We want a dragon. We want a flying machine. We want some genies in bottles and a battle between genies and a battle with a genie and an ice dragon. That's great stuff. Yeah, I love all that. It's the sort of charming stuff that makes us put this show on our list in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
We mentioned the music by Vernon Elliott and, you know, again, extending the sort of family business cottage industry aspect that he needs somebody to play the clarinet. So, of course, he asks his daughter, Bridget. I love all that sort of stuff, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the things that are strongest about this, many of them are the things that a lot of the small films productions have in common.
Yes, it's the things that we've talked about many a time, but I do love them. And I love the bassoon. I listen to the bassoon music from Vernon Elliott that accompanies the stories and just takes me back to when I used to watch these shows as a kid.
Okay, so let's, before we come back to some of the problematic elements, and we will talk about that a little bit more, but before we do that, are there any negatives that you want to point out aside from that particular situation?
I will say that this is perhaps some of the most basic and simple animation that we've seen on British Invaders, and particularly from small films, particularly the first six episodes, where in some places it doesn't seem, it's just drawings on screen with very little animation at all. Now, obviously, it gets better, and I think it's worth sticking with to see how good some of the black and white episodes become. But I think those early episodes are a bit of a challenge in a way, Brian.
Yes, there are some things that are quite basic in this, in terms of the visuals. And you also have, in those early ones, you have one voice for everything, which is a little limiting. And that's like it was in that very first series of Ivor the Engine as well, when you had only Oliver Postgate. So yeah, those things are a little limiting and they make it a little harder to watch.
They do, yes. You need to be aware of them. But of course, it does bring us onto our negative points of some of the uncomfortable stuff that we experience watching this with the eyes of somebody in 2024 as opposed to the early 1960s, Brian.
Yeah, and that is really something that's there. Something that stood out to me, the part of this series that I like the best is the middle part where it's after those very early six episodes and before we get to the color ones, we have some interesting things in the middle there. And included in that is the flying machine serial where we get into some stereotypical Middle Eastern or Arab type depictions. And my favorite sequence, something that I quite enjoyed in a lot of respects, which was this battle between two genies and then between a genie and an ice dragon. That was really wonderful, and at the same time, it was also kind of problematic because you have these stereotypes of the Arab culture with the way it's shown and with things with the genies and with cowardice being shown with the genies and things like that. So you sort of have that uncomfortable thing of it being at its best and its worst at the same time, for me at least.
Yeah. I'm also fascinated by the cultural significance of Nanook of the North and its impact, or, you know, its influence on this show. But at the same time, Nanook of the North being an early example of manufactured reality that was constructed by the director and didn't in fact reflect the real character that he was documenting.
Yeah, and you do get this when they go to the north, presumably somewhere in the Arctic. You have these, you know, stereotypical things with the nukes and with Nuka, and she becomes Queen Nuka as well. And sort of this uncomfortable idea where Noggin is choosing a potential wife and he sees a picture, he's seeing a group of women there and sees a picture of Nuka and decides that she's the one and goes on this expedition. And when he gets there, of course, you know, she says, of course. And, you know, they decide to get married at that point. So that was a little bit strange, too.
And I will mention that we sometimes get comments about us looking at problematic issues of old shows and saying that perhaps we shouldn't go into this in too much detail. But, it, you know, we find it difficult not to look at it with our modern eyes and see some of the things that perhaps slipped under the radar back in earlier times, Brian.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of extremes with this. There's the extreme of saying that it was made in the past and that is how things were done that way, so you can't make any comment about it, and it sits apart from how we view things now completely. And then there's another extreme where you say there are problems with this and it doesn't matter when it's made, so there's no value to it at all and we can't watch it at all. I think we are better off with something in the middle where you do look at the problems and acknowledge them, but knowing that, still look at the older programs for what they do have to offer. And it also lets us see how things were done then and how far we've come and how things have changed.
Good point. And also, it's, I think, important if you are considering showing these early shows to your children now. And I think there's stuff that parents would need to be aware of before they make decisions as to whether to you know, get these DVDs or not. Which sort of brings me, Brian, to think about the small film shows we have discussed. So now this is our fourth one after Clangers, Bagpuss and Ivor the Engine, and now Noggin the Nog. Where are you going to put it in the ranking of those shows, Brian?
Oh, that is interesting. So I will do my ranking. I will say I'll go from the bottom up, and I'll say number four, the weakest one, is Noggin the Nog. And above that, number three, I'll put Bagpuss. Number two, I'll put Ivor the Engine. And in first is still Clangers.
Interesting. Okay. I think I'm going to surprise myself by also putting Noggin the Nog last. I didn't think I would, because I remembered Noggin the Nog with such joy from my childhood and the wonderful narration by Oliver Postgate. But I think it is the weakest of the four. I think Ivor the Engine is above it, like you said. I'm actually going to put, I think then Clangers in second place. I'm going to stick with Bagpuss as my favourite. I just love Bagpuss.
Okay, very good.
Yes, but we did note also there's a slight difference because Clangers and Bagpuss are 3D animations, whereas these early stories are sort of 2D paper animation. So there's a difference between them.
The paper ones feel more like cartoons, and the model ones feel, you know, are more in the sort of claymation type space.
Yeah, indeed.
Part of the issue issue, I think, is that most of what Noggin the Nog did, Ivor the Engine did better.
Yes.
And for this sort of 2D animation and for the kinds of things they did with the kindly characters and the sort of things with dragons and so on, there are some nice things in there, but for the most part, Ivor the Engine did those better, where Bagpuss and Clangers sort of did quite different things.
Yes, they are different shows. Ivor the Engine is the one most similar to Noggin the Nog, and as you say, Brian, it does just about everything better, and it's probably the one to go for.
Yeah, it sort of feels like your charming piece to look at is Ivor the Engine, and Clangers and Bagpuss give you sort of quite different things.
Yeah. Recommendations time, Brian. What are you going to say? I think we've sort of covered this already, but let's do it for our listeners.
Yeah, so I am not going to recommend Noggin the Nog. It's an interesting show, and certainly if you're a completist for early animation and for early small films and so on, there's something to say for it. But I don't think you need this one, so I'm not going to recommend it. I will recommend Ivor the Engine instead. And I'll also note that since we covered Ivor the Engine, Blu-ray releases of it have come out, and there are releases from the black and white episodes that we couldn't see at the time. We could see some of them. The ones that we couldn't see, all of that's been released on Blu-ray now. So my recommendation is check out Ivor the Engine.
I am going to similarly surprise myself and not recommend Noggin the Nog unless you are a completist and want to get these this series for yourself. I am going to sound like a broken record again, Brian, by recommending that if you've got children, there is a DVD that gives you all of Bagpuss, the first season of Clangers, and I think all the colour episodes of Ivor the Engine. That DVD is still available. It's still cheaper than the Noggin the Nog DVD set, and I'm going to say I would recommend that one again, but I think I've said that throughout our small films coverage.
It does sound like a good DVD set, and I'll add to the recommendations that if you are showing it to children, you might want to screen it first, because there are some questionable things you might want to talk to your kids about and so on, but there is some good stuff there for sure.
Watch it with them and chat about it. Yeah, excellent stuff.
Okay. So, in summary, Noggin the Nog introduced us to the Nogs, and Noggin, who quite early on becomes king and takes Nuka of the Nukes as his wife, and we see a variety of adventurers traveling to different places and encountering the little people and ice dragons and even genies, traveling in a flying machine and having all sorts of adventures.
Great stuff. Do let us know if you've gone back and revisited the show.
Please do.
And please join us next time. We're sticking with children's television for a while because we're looking at another BBC show, but this time from 2002, and it's their adaptation of a much-loved children's classic book, Stig of the Dump. Something to talk about when we come back next time.
Yeah, a little bit more recent, that one. Until then, you can find all of our past episodes at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there, and you can follow us on Instagram and on Threads. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both Instagram and Threads.
Yes, do come along and check out what's happening on the various social media to keep up to date with our shows and our releases and our upcoming schedule. And please come and join us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you will find at vognetwork.com. Voice of Geeks is a sort of loose association of podcasts, gaming content, Twitch streaming, all sorts of geek-related stuff going on at the Voice of Geeks at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us. Until next time, Eamon in England saying, listen, and I'll tell you a tale.